Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Live with Barrett. I am your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and I'm very, very excited today. I won't let my voice go really high, but I'm very, very excited today. We are having a conversation with a winner of the Cannes Short Film Festival and a fantastic multimedia artist. Her name is Kristen, I believe, Palana, if I'm incorrect,
right.
She can see me, and we are talking to her from her expatriate home in Italy. Kristen?
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, you're welcome. I am excited to talk with you. I really love being able to reach out to people who are doing such wonderful work around the world, and I mean, being an entrepreneur and doing what you love, taking what you can do and doing what you want to do is really something special. And I am really excited about talking with you, Kristen, because you've taken art and animation and done some really wonderful things with it. Film, video, I don't know what you would call the other forms of just art, and the color is so vibrant. Your work is absolutely incredible, and you are doing online teaching, and your artwork, even just advertising your courses and the videos and things in your course, it's so colorful, so vibrant, so full of life. And to me, when a person can do that, it is because they have a lot of life in them. Just to let you know, I am the daughter of an artist. So it is a very special thing to me to be talking with one. So can you kind of tell us, I mean, a little bit about just on the personal side, how you've gotten to where you are, where you come from and where you are now and what your life is like. As an artist, where you've taken this?
Absolutely. I come from a small town in Massachusetts called Swansea. It's about an hour south of Boston. It's near Fall River, Massachusetts, Providence, Rhode Island. So I come from a very cold climate. And I went to school there. I didn't actually travel much when I was younger. People from my town don't normally, at least back in the 80s, didn't go much farther than Boston very often. So I was always very interested in the world around me, but I didn't always have the opportunity to get there or travel much. And I am very lucky because even though I'm in Rome, Italy now, thanks to social media, thanks to the internet, thanks to phones and everything else, I'm able to stay in touch with my hometown friends and family, those that are still there and those that are scattered all over the world. And pretty much since 2006, I've been living and working in Rome, Italy. I started teaching at the American University of Rome, which is a very small university, about 500 students from all over the world. And before that, I had been living in the New York City area, teaching at a state university, William Patterson University in Wayne, New Jersey, and in New York City at Pratt Institute. And it's been my privilege and my honor to be teaching all these wonderful students since 2000, since I was 24. I've been teaching students that were maybe just a little bit younger than myself when I first started. And now I'm I'm here in Rome, and I've also just started teaching online students since November, which has been really fabulous. And I've all along have been able to continue making my art and to express myself, and I've been extremely grateful that I've had that opportunity, that I haven't had to put it away in the pursuit of more practical rent-paying things. So it's been good.
Well, you know, it's not always that the quote-unquote practical is the most profitable. And it's important to do what you love to do. And I take it that you love teaching also.
Indeed. And actually, I'm quite surprised at how much I like online teaching because if you had asked me a year ago what I thought about online teaching, I was open-minded about it, but most professional educators will often think it's some kind of inferior form of teaching because you're not meeting with your students face-to-face. But it's been extremely gratifying. I especially like that I'm able to reach people that are in the developing world, people that maybe otherwise couldn't afford to go to university or wouldn't have had access to one of my classes. That by far is the most gratifying thing, is all the people that I'm able to come into contact with now.
That's very true. Education has really changed. I think that with the massive expense, at least in the United States, the massive expense of an education outside of high school has really become prohibitive to people, and it has made people realize you go to university in order to learn something because of a passion, because of an interest, and also, because you want to work in a particular field. But there are so many things that you can gain, ways you can gain knowledge that don't involve paying $25,000, $35,000, $50,000 per year. So it's very important that I think online teaching has happened. And I don't put down academic education because,
just very expensive.
It's just that it's different. And as you said, people are able to now learn things that empower them, and they're able to learn them online. You said something there about, that online teaching is thought of as inferior because you don't have interaction with students. And I wonder what your opinion is really of that, because my observation is that you don't necessarily have that much interaction with students. I don't necessarily see interaction. And I say this not, I graduated from, my first degree was quite a few years ago, and my second degree was not so far ago, and my third degree not so far from there, and my fourth degree very recent, and working on the fifth. So I have lots of academic education. So what I can tell you is that I, for example, I've been living in Denmark and in this decade, and I've sat in the university in classes, and I haven't seen the students interacting. I see the instructor lecturing and can barely get anyone to ask a question. So I'm wondering, is there much more interaction going on in the classes? I mean, in your view?
Well, you brought up some great points. I think it depends on, if you're a university student, it depends where you are and the size of your classes. I've been a bit spoiled as an educator, because everywhere that I've taught, everywhere, I've had small classes of roughly 15 students. So if they're doing, they're shopping online or something during my course, I just have to kind of slam their head down, and I wouldn't actually use violence. But the point is, they can't really get away with it. But if you're in a big lecture hall with 500 students and the professor doesn't know your name and couldn't possibly know your name because they're so outnumbered, then certainly it's probably a lot like taking an online course. I also was a bit spoiled because when I got my two degrees, they were at small art and design schools where the class sizes were also very small. So my experience both as a student and as an educator has been with small classrooms. And I just finished a great course at the American University of Rome. Our semester ended yesterday, so my head is spinning a little bit from that. But, you know, I know all of my students by name. I know what their career aspirations are. I know their strengths. I know their weaknesses. Sometimes I know things I don't want to know. One of my favorite courses this semester was is called Media, Art, and Social Activism. And actually, one of our class projects was I had them use one of my online courses, which is a crowdfunding course, as part of their homework. So we did a lot of things this semester, but one of the things they did was they used my crowdfunding online course, kind of like an interactive textbook. And then towards the end of the semester, we planned, created, and launched an online crowdfunding campaign. And it, actually, the recipient of the crowdfunding funding is one of my online students from Tanzania, a law student at the University of Dar es Salaam, who's taken pretty much all of my classes. He finishes all of them 100%, asks intelligent questions in the discussion area, messages me. So there I have interaction. But
what a wonderful way.
By the way, say it again.
What a wonderful way to give back.
Thank you. In fact, my students proposed worthy causes that they wanted to do a crowdfunding campaign for, and one of the students saw that I had helped Yasini, the student from Tanzania, back in December, get funding to stay in university, and so that's actually what the class voted to do. I didn't impose it on them. And, yeah, they just reached their goal this morning, $1,500. They actually went over their goal. And so I try to bring it all together. But in terms of the online courses, while there's definitely, you know, no face-to-face interaction, I do get a good number of students. They ask intelligent questions. They message me. They give me feedback. But it is completely different in many ways to teaching face-to-face.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see your experience and perspective. You are teaching. I want to talk a bit about your classes. You are teaching seven different courses. Seven. One of them is a group course. Started in November with this, and you have really been pumping out some incredible. I want to take a little bit of a break, and then I want to come back and kind of talk a little bit about each one, if you could kind of go through, you know, each of the classes, just sort of give us a summary of what you are teaching in those classes. So we'll do that right after this break. This is Live Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and we are talking with Cannes Award-winning multimedia artist Kristin Halana. Welcome back to to Live with Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell. Technical gods tried to get me again and dump me out during the commercial break, but I'm back. We are talking live with Cannes Award-winning artist Kristin Palana. She is doing some fantastic entrepreneurial things. She is a university professor who is also teaching online. She is reaching out to a truly global audience. And I am interviewing many entrepreneurs from around the globe, and I hope that you will continue to tune into these interviews. We will take a break from them for a while and be back in the middle of June with more interviews. But now let's get back to our conversation with Kristin. And Kristin is about to tell us about the classes that she teaches online, which are on the site Udemy, or Udemy, as some people say, U-D-E-M-Y. So, Kristin, could you kind of give us a little summary of the, you have seven classes. You started in November, and you've just whipped these classes out. So, lean on us. What are you teaching?
I missed the last part of what you said, but I got the gist that I have cranked out a lot of courses in a short amount of time. It's funny because if you could just see inside my head at all the ideas that I have for future courses, you would say, "Wow, I can't believe you haven't done those yet." But I have seven courses, but actually, two of them come from a larger one that I made. I kind of made an online teaching mistake, a happy online teaching mistake with my second course, but which is that I basically made a gigantic 7-hour course. I originally made it for my web design students last semester to use as kind of like a reference that they could use after the end of our semester. So if they wanted to ever go back and revisit anything we did, then they would have this online artifact. But what I didn't realize back then is that most online courses are more for, you know, that they tend to work best when they're not too long, because people can get overwhelmed easily. So usually the more successful online courses tend to be about 1 hour, 2 hours, usually not too much more than 3 hours. So I took my big web design course and I took two smaller parts of it, and I made one of those a free course that everyone can access. It's called Web Design Do's and Don'ts, Evaluate Your Website, and it just teaches people what to look for in so-called good and so-called bad websites. And then another part to that is a WordPress course for people that somebody designed a website for them, but they don't actually know how to edit or manage their website, and they have to pay money every time they want to change their name or add a picture. So I made a little course to teach people in less than an hour how to use their WordPress website. But my first course that I ever made was back in November, and it's called Life Hack with Color Psychology, Increase Your Influence, and it's about an hour and a half long. And basically what I do is I go through all the colors, and I teach the students how to use colors in an intelligent way in their daily life and at work and at home and in presentations, in their clothing, whatever, so that they can have a huge impact and be able to actually influence the world around them, because colors actually influence the chemicals in our brains. It enables people to feel and think a certain way. So if you know what colors will produce what reactions, you can actually use them to your advantage. And the idea for that course actually came from a little half an hour lecture that I give to freshmen during their orientation course, where they, you know, kind of learn about the university and all the different professors. So I teach them about intercultural communication, about body language, and about color, about nonverbal communication methods. So that was my first one. The second one is the Monster Web Snack.
Can I stop you there for a minute? I want to ask you a little bit about colors. And I wonder what you can tell me about. For example, my favorite color is blue, and I tend to like primary shades of things, primaries and then pastels. I'm example, I would wear either, you know, a very true blue, or I would, or a pastel blue, or I would use it, you know, on something versus something that was more of a fluorescent color. And I like a blue based red rather than an orange based red. Mm. So and I try not to wear red a lot, because I find that red actually, it's like I'm the red cape being waved by the matador and everyone else bull and charges at me. So I wonder if you could speak to my love of the color blue, and I like to use that, and I like to use purple on websites, but mostly blue. So what does that mean?
Okay, well, I actually love blue, and that's what I'm wearing in my profile picture on most of my images. Blue is an excellent color for just bringing across the idea that you're loyal, you're trustworthy, you're someone that knows what they're talking about. It's actually the best color to wear to a job interview, but usually if you're going to wear blue to a job interview, go with a navy blue or a dark blue as opposed to a lighter blue. It just creates much more of an impact in your interviewers. They're going to immediately, I mean, again, we're assuming that, you know, at a job interview that you, everyone, that you're appropriately qualified, that you're doing all the things that you're supposed to be doing otherwise at a job interview. The color bit just kind of pushes you over the edge and gives you that psychological edge. But blue is a calming color. It makes people feel at ease. Politicians wear it a lot for that reason, because people tend to trust them more, for better or worse. But I know exactly what you mean about the red, and it's actually not your imagination. Red makes people's blood pressure go up. People are much more likely to get angry with you if you're wearing red. Or, you know, if you're on a date, you're actually more likely to ignite passion from your date if you're wearing red. But I like to wear red on a Monday morning, 9 o'clock, when I have to teach a very sleepy class, because it wakes up everybody in the room. And, yeah, it just makes people feel excited, for better or worse. You kind of have to, you know, use your diplomacy, make sure it stays more in the realm of excitement and enthusiasm and less in the realm of anger and agitation when you're wearing red.
What I will tend to do, too, is because I am a very authoritative person, and I recognize that about myself, and I am not, as someone once said to me, I'm not a deferential woman. I don't speak in deferential tones, and I have a habit of speaking in a way that is actually perceived psychologically as masculine. I speak in definite sentences. I don't go up at the end of my sentence in my tone of voice, and I make statements rather than ask questions. And all of those are habits that actually psychologically, my background is partially in psychology, are perceived as masculine, not feminine. So often what I will do is, instead of wearing red, I will wear pink.
Mm-hmm.
Still come across the, you know, I will.
Hello, are you still there? I think the call has dropped her, so while I'm waiting for her to come back, I'm just going to speak to that. She's actually doing exactly the right thing. If you're wearing pink is considered obviously more feminine, although you've probably seen a lot more men wearing pink now than you might have seen 50 years ago. But if a woman wears hot pink, so a darker pink, it's actually a female power color. So even though she was saying that she comes off as very definitive and, you know, more traditionally masculine, powerful, confident, assertive, actually there's no better color to wear than a dark pink if you want to still come across as powerful, assertive, et cetera, but you want to also exude a more feminine quality. So highly recommend.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you. Yes, it'll dump the technical gods. They'll dump me out. They'll dump you out. But always dial back in so we can't be defeated. But you're saying with the darker pink, Yes. Although I think, would you maybe agree that it depends also in what you're wearing? Because once I bought a pair of pants. I really love those pants. I still have those pants. And I tried them on, and I was going to buy them, which I did. And I asked my sister, well, you know, don't you like these pants? Don't I look great in them? And she said, well, yes, those are some pants. They are, they're kind of a fuchsia with a dark pink plaid. They're kind of, yeah, excitable pants.
Yes. Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, color is going to affect us. You know, there's color's effect on you individually, and then it's how it affects other people as well. So definitely you want to play around not just with what color you're wearing or using in your presentation or painting your walls in your home or whatever, but also what saturation. Is it, you know, really, really vibrant? Is it more muted? I talk also a lot about that with the color yellow. It's actually my three-year-old son's favorite color. And apparently, I just learned this, it's the least popular favorite color that people have. People either really hate or really love yellow. But yellow is much more palatable to people who don't like it. If it's desaturated, it's kind of like, you know, a white, lemony yellow. Then a lot of people can tolerate it better.
Well, I think that's an incredible course that you have. So,
thank you.
On to the next. Tell us about your next course.
Okay, so the second course that I did after doing the color course is called Web Snacks, Essential Skills and Secret Recipes for Newcomers. And there, you know, this was my second ever online course, and I thought, okay, let's kill two birds with one stone here. I want to, you know, add another online course, but I'm also teaching web design this semester, so let me make something for my students to use. And what happened is that I had, you know, I basically tried to replicate a 14-week semester in an online course. Luckily, you know, it's not days and days long. It only ended up being 7 hours long. But still, that's kind of big for an online course. But that said, it's really comprehensive. I kind of, in the description of it, I mentioned that it's like having 10 mini courses, and it's a full web design foundation. So for anyone that maybe took a web design course once or they started doing it on their own but they have lots of gaps in their knowledge, or they just know how to do WordPress but they don't know, you know, the fundamentals like HTML and all the other stuff, how to make web graphics or anything like that, it's all there in one course. And, yeah, it basically takes you from the beginning, what makes a good website and a bad website, how to make a website with HTML coding, CSS coding, how to make web images, how to make websites from scratch using Dreamweaver or other tools, and then finally how to plan and create a website and use WordPress, which tends to be the favorite tool for people these days in 2015 to make a website. So that's my big, gigantic course. And as I was saying before, it's got two baby courses that came from it. The Web Design Do's and Don'ts is a free course that teaches you about how to recognize a good website versus a bad website and how to improve a website that you maybe already have and you don't know what to fix. It'll help you. And then there's another one that teaches you how to use WordPress for people who've never used it before to edit websites. So that's my second one. Did you want me to go on to my third one?
I sure do. I want.
Okay. So, and then the third course I made in January, I had a winter break. And unfortunately, I probably should have rested, but I didn't. I made another online course. But I'm glad because this one means so much to me. I mean, they all mean a lot to me, but this one in particular because it's a crowdfunding course. It's called Crowdfunding Confidential, Raise Money for You and Your Cause. And there's a ton of other crowdfunding courses out there. But what makes mine different or my spin is that I've been raising money for needy children in developing countries since 2004 through my website, aurishouse.com. And basically, I don't know how this happened, but it's 11 years later, and pretty much consistently since 2004, I've been raising, you know, $1,000 here, maybe $5,000 there, $500 here, $500 there, all different amounts, basically about $10,000 to $11,000 a year in my spare time, which I don't have much of, for all of these little crowdfunding projects. And so I've been helping other people with their crowdfunding projects, and I decided to make an online course because it's just much easier for me to teach other people how to successfully raise money for charity and for their causes, maybe for themselves if they got a horrible medical condition and they need, you know, to pay medical bills, whatever it is. I'm really happy that this course exists because now I can just send them to my online course and I can work with them and give them advice and point them to particular lessons. And as I was saying before, my students in my media art and social activism class just successfully used my crowdfunding course, and they've just met their goal this morning of $1,500 to pay for the university education of a student in Tanzania who comes from a village where they live on less than a U.S. $1 a day. So $1,500 seems like nothing to an American student who has to pay so much more, but to someone in the developing world, it's the difference between going to university or going back to your village and not being able to do much of anything. So this course is especially close to my heart, even though they all are.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And you give me some ideas that I definitely want to talk with you about. So catch you either, you know, after the show, you know, or elsewhere. And I would love to talk with you about some projects. But I love this idea of raising funds, of giving back. And it is very... oh, my gosh, that just touches my heart so much that we are able to do that, and that you're doing that is very, very special. What a blessing.
Thank you.
Tell us about your next course after that. You have, and all of these courses, by the way, I should tell everyone, they are listed on the episode page for this broadcast. There is a link to all of these courses, so you will see them there. So,
great.
Your next course.
Yes, the next one, I already mentioned the two that came from the Web Snacks course, so the only other one I didn't talk about is actually a weirdly wonderful course. It's got a hamster, an illustrated hamster is the picture. It's called Create Quick and Easy Unique Illustrations in Illustrator, and this is kind of an accidental course, but I'm very happy that it exists. What happened was back in March, I'm also the director of the Film and Digital Media Program at the American University of Rome, so I teach, but I'm also in charge of making sure that all the courses that run in my program have good professors, that the students are happy, that the multimedia lab is running, blah, blah, blah. And what happened is, unfortunately, one of my wonderful professors who was teaching a course called The Computer as a Media Tool, which is a multimedia introduction course, he had to leave in the middle of the semester. And so he had to leave in the middle of the semester to go to New York for a health emergency. And I took over his course for a couple of weeks while I looked for a replacement. And basically, I created this course for his students because there was one week that I wasn't going to be able to be there because I wasn't expecting to take over this course during those days and times. So I made this course that basically teaches students how to use the program Adobe Illustrator and how to make illustrations and how to do it all with absolutely no drawing ability, because I get a lot of students that have never taken an art course before and no technical savvy, so basically they may have never picked up Illustrator before, and after 1 hour's time they are using Illustrator, they have beautiful original illustrations, and they have this skill for the rest of their lives. So it's a course that I created in 2 days, two really crazy days, but it's actually turning out to be one of my most popular courses. I'm getting a lot of people that are delighted with their newfound ability to make an illustration. So I'm really glad that it exists, but it was not a course I was planning on making. It just sort of happened.
Well, that's what happens with life, too, and some really good things come out of life. You don't always plan them, but they happen. Well, this sounds wonderful. If you just come in the middle, Kristen Pallotta has made some wonderful courses that will teach you about art, about design, about color, about being able to use the web to create a website for yourself. She has 7 courses. If you look on her listing on Udemy, udemy.com, and put in her name, Kristen Pallotta, you will see all her courses there, and she's just described them to us. Now, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and then I want to come back and talk about 2 films. One involves vegetables, and the other one, I believe, involves babies. So this is Live with Barrett. I am your host, Barrett Clemenson Howell, and our special guest today is Cannes Award-winning multimedia artist Kristen Pallotta, and we'll be back in a moment to talk about film. Hello, and welcome back to Live with Barrett. I am your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and we are talking with the wonderful Kristen Pallotta, who is an educator. She's a professor at the American University in Rome. She is an online educator who is reaching out to the world, and she is also giving back through her art, through her educator abilities, talent, skills, experience, and education. So, Kristen, now we've talked about the courses that you're offering. You have 2 films. One of them's about vegetables and one of them's about babies. Could you tell us about this vegetable film first? Yes, vegetables.
Sure. Sure. That one, let me see. That one's from 2011. It's called Veggie Propaganda. And it's a very silly but serious music video that I did. It took a couple of years for me to do, actually. And there's a wonderful band from New York City called The Penultimate, and they wrote the veggie song together with me. I wrote this horrible song, and I gave it to them, and they made it actually sound cool. And then I animated to it, and it's pretty much a 6-minute saga where the goal was to try to get people to think about animals in a different way, to empathize with animals, our fellow earthlings, and to not just see them as objects or something to eat for lunch, but as sentient beings, creatures, etc. And then also the goal of the animation was not to convert everyone to vegetarianism, which a lot of there are a lot of things out there that are meant to try to convert people to become a vegan or a vegetarian. It's really more for the regular, everyday, average meat eater, and it's meant to be non-threatening in the sense that, you know, I'm not trying to make people feel horrible about their lives and about their choices, but it just it's educational, it's funny, it tries to
It's for the
It talks about the benefits of eating less meat or no meat. So if someone wanted to completely, you know, give up meat, great. But if they even just wanted to lessen their meat, it talks a lot about, you know, the impact on the environment, on health, on everything, how it's a really good decision to make.
Yes, well, I would definitely eat more vegetables. I love vegetables anyway, but I could definitely eat more vegetables. So in that respect, I would really like. I'm glad you said that it doesn't put down, you know, carnivores or omnivores, because I must admit, I love my meat. I do. I just can't help it. And it's actually, for me, it's very, very beneficial for me to eat meat, because I don't get enough protein and red blood cells, et cetera, from eating beans. And but yes, I love vegetables. I always have. My favorite meal growing up was to have a liver with onions and mushrooms and spinach on the side.
Always on the side.
Yes, give me spinach. Oh, yes. So that sounds like quite a project, and very creative. Again, a very creative way.
Thank you.
I like that collaborative approach also, and that you are focused on actually being diverse, that you don't close off any avenue. And that's really important also as an entrepreneur, is to realize that when you free yourself from doing what I call the J-O-B, the thing that you get up in the morning and you really hate and you really don't want to do it, and you open yourself up to what you love to do, you can find something such as being a university professor, but also to be making a film, to be making videos, to be creating online courses, to be collaborating with people in other mediums. That sounds wonderful. Now, tell us about the babies. The baby. I saw that baby.
Yes. Okay, so the new film that was finished in 2014, and it's on the film festival circuit right now, it's called This Too Shall Pass, and I just released it online about 2 weeks ago. So you can, by the way, I don't know if you want to later, I can give you the link to my website if people want to look at my animations, if they want to look at the online courses. I have discounts on my website, or just whatever. I can give you that link as well. But This Too Shall Pass is another. It's kind of like the illustration course. It's kind of an accidental animation. In that, after I had my second son here in Rome, I suffered from a bit of postpartum depression. And luckily, it was not very severe. I mean, some people really, really suffer with it. I had a much lighter case than many people have, and I was lucky because I was able to get out of it naturally, and it was still fine, thankfully. But I wrote this animation when I had a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old, and I think part of my blues came from also being in a foreign country, away from close family, grandparents, anybody that could help me. And I found myself being hyper sensitive to people looking at my baby, looking at me. Are they talking about me? Are they talking about my baby? Are they judging me? You know. And actually, what happens when you have a baby is the answer is yes, they are judging you. You know, no matter how good of a job you do, there'll always be that moment in public where the baby starts crying and people will, you know, have a million reasons as to why the baby's crying, or, you know, whatever it is. So,
or suggestions as to how you should.
Yes. Yes. And I was dealing with that from the Italians, but also my husband's German, so we were going to Germany, and it was getting completely different feedback from the German, you know, also cultural differences as well. So what was acceptable in Italy was not acceptable in Germany, and then also in the U.S. when we traveled to the U.S. as well. So that was a big deal.
That is a lot to go through. I mean, I think anyone would have postpartum depression with that, but I do understand because I've been an expat, as I said to you when, before we came on the show, I am an expatriate in Denmark. And mm-hmm. until fairly recently, I had been there actually a fairly long time and really got homesick, you know, which in mm-hmm. some sense is actually can be post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, there are so many mm-hmm. things people don't realize when you're living in another country, in another culture. The longer you actually stay, the more difficult it actually is. It's not that you know, get there, get culture shock, and get over it. It can be very challenging to live in another culture and still try to have your identity. And I can imagine mm-hmm. as a mother, that's definitely very challenging. So,
well, that's
what about,
also like living in another country, becoming a mother all of a sudden when you never were before. That's a huge culture shock as well.
Yes, yes. So tell us, what is the "this too shall pass" part of it?
So I wanted to make, okay, so it's not really a narrative film in the traditional sense where you have a story that has a beginning, middle, and end. It's really kind of about an emotional state. I was trying to capture my mood swings. And so, you know, there's moments that are happy and tender, and then panicky, anxiety, anger, sadness, freaking out. So it's kind of a roller coaster effect, and the title "This Too Shall Pass" refers to those moments that you just wish would pass. You know, like when you're rocking a baby to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning, and oops, suddenly it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and you haven't gotten anywhere. You know, when is this going to be over with? But then you have those moments that you just wish would never end. And so I played around with all of that, you know, time being fast, time being slow. I don't want to spoil anything, but then there's a moment where suddenly, oops, it's all done. My children have grown up. I'm not there yet, but that's something that I hear a lot from parents of children that have left the nest, or they've gone off to college, or they've grown up, is, oh, you know, they tell me, enjoy these moments because they're going to be gone so fast. And meanwhile, I'm changing diapers. I'm thinking, rah, 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 you know, I'm swearing. You know, I'm just like, all those parents of adult children, they're so smug with their martinis and their, you know, their hobbies. So it's just, you know, kind of this funny, bittersweet idea of time and how, you know, it goes by too fast, it goes by too slow. We're looking back, we're looking forward. It's a bit of a mess, really.
Yes. Well, but it's very real, and I think you've dealt with it in a way many people can probably not only digest it, but identify with it or come to understand.
Mm-hmm. I
yeah.
hope so.
So now, tell me the process of how this, now this is your film that won an award in the Cannes Short Film Festival?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So can you tell me, did you just decide, oh, I made a film, I'm going to submit it to Cannes? I mean, when I think Cannes, I'm like, oh, the Palme d'Or, and oh, and I've actually been to where they hold the film festival, and I think, oh, the glamour, and I say, oh, Kristen was there. So tell me about this.
Okay, so well, I've been making short films since when? 2002 was my first one, when I was a graduate student. And I got into the habit, every time I make a film, I submit it to film festivals. I'm lucky enough that it gets played, you know, in different cities and different continents. And just recently with Veggie Propaganda and This Too Shall Pass, I started releasing them online as well. But, yeah, basically every time I make a film, I then go through this process where I submit it to film festivals. And the thing about submitting to film festivals is you never know who's going to love it, who's going to hate it. You just don't know. And I actually learned that with my first film called 5 o'clock Shadows back in 2002. I submitted it to some really fancy festivals in New York City, and I submitted it to, you know, I'm exaggerating here, but, you know, Paducah, Kentucky, Film Festival and Farm Stand, you know, like things that are maybe not so impressive. And actually, it was film festivals like that rejected me. And then I got into some really fancy ones. So sometimes you just never know who's going to love you, who's going to hate you. It's really a numbers game. And I would just recommend to my students as well as anyone else who makes films or does anything in the arts, don't get discouraged. Build up a thick skin and just keep submitting. If you're a writer, we've all, heard of how many rejections published writers had to go through before they were successful. Same thing with painters, anyone else. So with, basically with all my recent films, I have another very popular film called Larry and Roz about my grandparents, their first date from 2008, and that one's played on 5 continents. But, again, it was also rejected as well as accepted into all of these different film festivals. With This Too Shall Pass and the Cannes Short Film Festival, I just saw it as an option to submit. And I usually submit to really, it's like applying to your dream college, like students will apply to, Harvard and Yale, but maybe they'll apply to their state school and then maybe they'll have their safety schools. It's kind of the same thing with film festivals. So that's what I did. And I was very surprised and happy to get into the Cannes Short Film Festival, but you can't imagine how even more happy and surprised I was to find out that not only did it get in, but it won an award for Best Animated Short. So that was, I fell out of my chair practically when I saw that.
How do they notify you?
An email. So glamorous, right? Just an email.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's like everything happens online these days. So, and it was actually, I could have gone in person, but I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I was busy with a semester. And actually, Cannes is only 2 hours away from Rome by plane, and I kind of do regret not going now. But no, in fact, I wasn't even able to really attend because I had other things going on. I was just happy to have my film play there and to have it get out there.
Wow. So now, what is the specific award that you have won in Cannes?
So this particular award is for the Best Animated Short. So they have different categories. So they may have, Best Feature Film, Best Documentary, whatever the different categories were. And mine was in the Animated Shorts category, and it won in its category the first prize.
Did you get to walk the carpet? Did you?
I know. I wish I had a more exciting story about this. I was invited to go, and I could have gone, but unfortunately, in retrospect, it was pretty stupid, honestly. I put my university, my students, and, my family. I mean, I could have gotten away for sure. I've got a wonderful husband, and I could have sneaked away maybe for a couple of days. But at the time, it just seemed like so much was going on with my classes, with my students, with my job, with everything, with my kids. We were potty training, all these stupid things. And so I didn't go. I wish I had, actually.
Okay, well.
So, yeah.
Good mom. And that leads me to what I want to talk about before we end our time together. I want to talk a little bit about on the entrepreneurial side and on being you would be what is classified as not only an entrepreneur, a woman entrepreneur, but a mompreneur. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to take a short break and come back. This is Live with Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson-Powell. And we are talking right now with Kristen Polana. She is in Rome, Italy. And she's just been telling us about some wonderful films that she has made, one of which won an award for Best Animated Short at the Cannes Film Festival. So we'll be back in a moment, and we'll talk a little bit more with Kristen Polana.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Live with Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and we are talking today with Cannes Award-winning multimedia artist Kristin Polana, who is a university professor, multimedia artist, online educator, wife, mother, entrepreneur. So, you live in Italy. You are American, you are married to a German, and you live in Italy. What brought you to Italy, your job or your husband's job?
Actually, my job. a funny story is that we probably wouldn't still be here if we weren't so ignorant about how difficult it can be for not one but two people to just move to another continent and get a job and set up a life, because we thought Rome, Italy was going to be maybe like more like London or Paris, where, you know, a lot of international people come and they can kind of make it work. But, basically I wasn't looking for another job. I was at William Patterson University back in 2006, and my husband and I were flirting with the idea of living in a Mediterranean country or just going somewhere, abroad to live and work. And just for fun, I started looking around, and I have family in Italy, so I started to look in Italy, and I saw the job position that I ended up applying for and turned out to be my job, which I'm in right now. And so I took the job, and my husband stayed in the U.S. We were living in the New York City area, and we thought, oh, he's in finance, a totally different field. Oh, he'll be able to move over, no problem. Because, you know, it's an international profession, it's an international city. He'll be able to join me in a month. Well, in fact, it was much harder than that. And it was actually a year before he was able to join me. And it was really a massive leap of faith. And at some point it seemed like, oh my gosh, what have we done? We've completely made a horrible mistake. But in fact, it all worked out. And he was able to join me a year later. And now he's actually at the World Food Program, doing finance. It's a UN organization where actually they're in huge need right now all over the world, helping with all these disasters and earthquakes and wars and famines. So we're both really lucky because we were able to make it work.
Well, that sounds like a very familiar story, actually, since I've been an expat in Denmark. And despite mm-hmm. people may think about how easy it can be to move from one place to another, being a global citizen is not always so easy. And countries where you may think that it is easy and are not. I'm an American, and I am supposedly on, you know, the highly educated, master's degreed, English-speaking American, and that is what Denmark says it wants to give green cards to. And yet I and many other expats in the American, the British, Australian expat community have found it to be extremely difficult because the culture is very, very closed. It's a wonderful place to be. I mean, it's not, you know, it's horrible, but yes, I mean, the reality is much different than the brochure.
Yes. So, it's not like the movies, kids.
Yes. Not exactly. But okay, so you went for because of your job now. And while there, so here you are, you led the way over, and now here you're carrying a university professor position, also being, you've got your marriage, and you've got children, and you've got these entrepreneurial things that you're doing. How are you managing your time? What would you, if you had to advise someone who said, okay, I'm going to quit my day-to-day job and do this thing I love, and I want to be an entrepreneur, but I've got a husband and kids, what would you say to them? What are three things you would tell them?
Okay. First of all, I would recommend don't be overwhelmed at all the things that need to be done, because there's always going to be something that needs to be done, and you're never going to be able to do everything. I would recommend to find the things that you love. So if it is, you know, teaching online courses or having a business or being a consultant, whatever it is, try to, if you can, spend I don't know, 30 minutes, an hour, however you can find the time, just a little bit every day. Do something towards your goal and watch how that adds up over time. It could be that you're just incubating and you're just reading about starting a business. I've done that. I actually I'm taking online courses. I started last June, actually. It's the University for Peace, a diploma in social innovation. I got sucked in by their program, but that was how I started researching online courses many, many months before I ever made my first one. I'm finishing that up now. It's 5 courses that I'm taking with them. Do research. You know, if you are doing a business, work on your website maybe a little bit every day. Think about what it is that you're offering. If you're trying to write a book, write. You know, you just have to take little action steps and move towards your goal every day, even if it's, in my case, sometimes it's during nap time, you know, my son, if he's having a nap and I've got a spare half hour, I'll do something towards my goal. One thing I've done recently, and I realize I'm extremely lucky to be able to do this, which maybe you didn't know, is that I just in March decided to put in at my job for a 2-year leave of absence. It's actually a 1-year leave of absence that's renewable, hopefully. And part of the reason is that my husband and I, my family and I were going to probably be moving on from Rome to another country with the World Food Program, and we don't know yet where. So I've been trying to make myself very portable. There's a lot of uncertainty. But I'm very lucky because I'm able to hold on to my job right now, and I'm going to leave, and I'm going to spend more time with online teaching, with consulting, with freelance art and design, and really give it a go. I've never been a full-time entrepreneur. I've kind of just something I played around with on the side. So, here's my chance, so I'm going to take it.
Excellent. That's excellent. Yeah. What would you say to someone about self-care?
I'm going to give really good advice that I should probably take myself, and I don't. And that is, I need to rest more, and I would say anybody, you know, needs to, you know, you can't accomplish your goals if you're running on empty. I guess I follow my advice a little bit in that, you know, every morning I have a morning ritual where, you know, when I bring my kids to school, then I go to the coffee bar and I have my breakfast and I read books. I might listen to some audio sessions, maybe meditate, maybe go for a walk. I do that, and that's good. I need to rest a bit more. But anything that people can do to give themselves a bit of a break, quiet time, whatever it is, it's incredibly important, because if you don't take care of yourself, no one else is going to, and then you won't be able to help everybody, that, especially if you're like me, you're always trying to help everybody with everything, with crowdfunding, with their homework, with diapers, whatever it is. So you have to take care of yourself first. And I know it seems like common sense, but, you know, it's easier said than done sometimes.
Yes, I can definitely understand that. Easier said than done. I am a big proponent of the nap. I think it is very important to take a daily nap every day. That's my big self-care thing, is to get that nap. I like what you were talking about there in regards to taking a year's leave. What most people can in academia can recognize that as a sabbatical also. Take some time out to do something. But that is great, because now you have the opportunity to have the backup to get that support from your husband so that you can expand your entrepreneurial pursuits. And I think that that's really important to have that partnership, wouldn't you say, within a marriage when you want to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think the non-entrepreneurial spouse really needs to get a lot of credit as well, because, you know, I'm fortunate that I've been able to earn money with, you know, the online teaching and this and that, but the challenge will then be to find ways to scale that up so that I don't feel like, oh, I've gone from this paycheck to this now, you know, because that's a big thing is, you know, when you're going from, you know, paid employment where you know you have the safety of that paycheck coming every month, and, you know, if you get used to a certain number, that can be a bit daunting because I think every business starts out where you're lucky. I know just with traditional businesses, usually at the very beginning, you're just lucky to break even, or you may not break even for a while the first year or whenever it is. So there, you have to kind of give yourself a break and realize, okay, it's going to be a lot of work. I might not see the return on my investment right away, but with persistence, with a good action plan, you can do really well, I think.
Yes. Yes, well, you can make it through that first 3 years, then you'll make it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
exactly.
I have been bringing up the example of Sheryl Sandberg at Facebook, who just lost her husband. They were vacationing, apparently, and he was in the exercise room exercising on the treadmill and apparently slipped and fell off the treadmill and hit his head and died. And in talking about him in the memorial service, she said that he was the greatest partner and that she is where she is at Facebook because he actually told her to go get that job. He actually pushed her to negotiate what she got in order to have that position and get the salary and benefits that she is making. She had that, and he took over, you know, doing chores, not all of them, but, you know, really being partner in the marriage so that she could also succeed as a woman in business. So I think it's very important, especially if you are partnered, to have that kind of support. And it's good to hear that you also do have that kind of support, because not everyone necessarily does. And being a mompreneur is really challenging, as you already noted. Time management and self-care are really, really important. Well, is there any other thing that you would like to sort of, before we end our time together today?
I would just say that, you know, first of all, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed speaking with you. And I would just say to anyone listening, if you would like to speak with me, talk to me, or get in touch with me about anything and everything, you can contact me through my website and let me know what I can help you with. I'm happy to help in a number of areas, and I love to connect with people all over the world. I love to hear other people's stories, and I love to help people troubleshoot and problem solve. And it could be something related to art and design, or it could just be something, you know, related to daily life, academia, being a student, getting jobs, all of those things. So I'm happy to help.
What's your website URL?
It's kpalana.com. So it's my first initial, kpalana at hotmail, kpalana.com.
Okay. That's where you can find her website, and you can find her courses on udemy.com, udemy.com, and you can put in Kristen Palana, and her courses should come up. And again, she has 7 courses sitting there waiting for you to broaden your knowledge. Thank you for today's conversation. This has been very, very interesting. I really enjoyed it from all aspects, from the art to being an expatriate to being a university professor and being an entrepreneur and being a wife and a mother who is out there, as I say, spreading the love, making money. And you are Thin Live with Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and we have been talking with multimedia artist Kristen Palana from Rome, Italy. And it has been a wonderful conversation. You can check out the URLs on the page for this broadcast. Check out her website, www.kpalana.com, kpalana.com. And be sure to take what you've heard here today and use it to enrich your life. Our next broadcast will be live broadcast, will be in June. We'll start up again in June, taking a bit of a end of spring break and coming back just before we enter into the summer months. And then we will have a whole new lineup of more entrepreneurs who are waiting to talk with me about what they're doing out there to spread the love, make the money, and change the world. I wish you all love. I wish you all a wonderful day. Bye-bye.